Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Design the Love Life You Want webinar. So this is about how you can create your own program of real change in your life. So instead of being resigned to the love life that you can get, you can design the love life that you want. And if it rhymes, it must be extra true. So more than anything, this is really about life mastery, learning how to feel good at will, how to hardwire happiness into your neurology, how to control your thoughts independent of circumstance, and also acquire some actual skills when it comes to dating and courtship. And I'm going to be using principles from positive psychology, mindfulness, and Eastern philosophy. And the idea is to rewire your brain in ways that serve you better in the long run. And this is all about the long run. If I can summarize all of Eastern wisdom in one principle, that's sustainability. So we're here to give you some skills that are sustainable in the long run to bring you a really great, deep, fulfilling love life. So this also means that we're going to be re-examining certain deep-seated and perhaps unconscious beliefs about how you've been running your life up to this point. Because as the Course in Miracles says, your best thinking got you here. So if your best thinking does not get you to the point that you want to be, it's time to adopt some new ways of thinking. Now, there's only so much I can cover in the space of an hour, so I'll try to get in as much as possible without talking too fast to the point that it's incomprehensible, but I do have a lot of material for you. So welcome, and feel free to put in the little chat box there where you're coming from, and that way I know that I'm speaking to live people. All right, so what we're going to talk about today is who you really are, what you really want, the thing that actually fulfills you, some of the science behind peak performance and how it's relevant to your love life, how to spot and find good guys and why you want to do that, and how to attract them into your life. So some deep kind of work on basic beliefs and attitudes and values, and also some little bit of technique and a few fun exercises that'll get you in that mode of thinking so you can actually feel what this material is like when it's implemented into your life as opposed to it being some kind of theoretical construct. So let's jump right in with who you really are. Now, thanks to Facebook, every week, basically two of my friends have babies and occasionally I get to meet them when they're visiting. And recently I had a friend visiting from London and she had this super cute kid. We went to the museum together and, you know, he's 2 months old. His name is Gus. And, you know, she says, would you like to hold Gus? I'm like, of course. And so Gus is sitting on my lap and I'm looking deep into his eyes. I'm like, holy cow, you know, what a miracle. You're looking deep in this kid's eyes. It's like looking the eyes of infinity. It's amazing. And everybody looks at the kid. They come over. Oh, you know, what's his name? How old is he? Everybody acknowledges that the kid is a miracle, a baby, right? One cell turns into two, turns into four, turns into eight, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, all the way to 40 trillion cells. They all work together. The kid smiles, the kid breathes, the heart beats, the kid poops. Everything's working. It's amazing, right? Now, here's the thing, though. Now, if you had that baby, right? That baby is a miracle. What if that baby were sitting on a unicorn, like a real live unicorn? That would be like double miracle, right? You got the kid and you've got the unicorn on top of that, right? So that's like extra. Okay, so I'm being a little silly here, but not that silly. I'm trying to make a point here, which is that, you know, the unicorn may not be realistic, but let's say this baby, there's no unicorn, it's just a baby now, but let's say this baby just by grasping at the syllables of language flying through the air, it was able to reconstruct the entire English language in a matter of a year to start speaking English. And what if it could develop enough motor control to start standing and walking and moving around and then maybe even learning the alphabet and thereby synthesizing its own version of the English language, saying stuff that nobody's ever said before? And what if it could use those skills to go through all of elementary school, middle school, high school, maybe even college, get into college, right? Fill out applications, get in, and maybe even get a job and support other people and be a force for good in the world I mean, would that not be miracle plus in that, like having that unicorn there? Well, guess what? That's you. Okay. And yet everybody looks at the baby and thinks that's the miracle. But you, who have successfully crossed like 20,000 streets without getting run over, nobody acknowledges that miracle. That, my friend, is the miracle. Okay. So again, I'm being mildly facetious here, but my point is that you are baby plus a whole herd of unicorns. Everything that you've done is a miracle. And, you know, you've been assembled from stardust that, you know, supernovas exploded billions of light years away. And here you are. So why not acknowledge that miracle too? Because when you do that, your whole relationship to the rest of the world also changes. You start to see everything as a miracle. And then you see every person that you meet as a miracle. And so everything becomes a part of the divine. Everything becomes kind of holy. And I think that's a far more empowering viewpoint to approach life and dating and love and all these things and companionship than, you know, I don't think my butt looks good in these pants, which is a concern on a lot of other women's minds, apparently. Or, I'm having a bad hair day. Or, you know, skin not good. Or, oh, you know, I'm just not these guys' type. So what I want you to do is come from a much, much bigger perspective. So intellectual understanding of this concept is great, but why not actually get a feel for and experience it right now with a quick little meditation? So I call this the Galaxy Consciousness Meditation. It's a little guided meditation. Do not close your eyes if you are driving or operating heavy machinery. Otherwise, I invite you to close your eyes and join me in a quick little meditation. And imagine that you are a tiny molecule of air, oxygen or something, and you are all the way out in outer space, out in the cosmos, so far away that the Earth is a tiny little blue dot. And you look around you and all you see is infinite space and the Milky Way galaxy and stars, hundreds of billions of stars. And you look at them and there are no puny stars. All stars are kind of big and majestic and, you know, they're burning hydrogen, turning it to helium, emitting all this light and heat. And there's a certain majesty to the vastness of the cosmos as you're out there. So kind of look around you and notice how big and beautiful and amazing everything is. And you, little molecule of oxygen, are now going to kind of speed toward that little blue dot called the Earth. And you're going to come in, you're going to come. And because you're really small, your size of a molecule of air, you start to notice other molecules too. Up to now, it's been vacuum, but you start to get to the other molecules and it suddenly gets a little crowded. You know, you start to hit the atmosphere. Oh, look, other molecules of air. That's interesting. And you just keep on speeding down, down all the way to the crust of the Earth, down to a city, and, you know, start to see the landscape. And you start to approach your city, actually, and you start to see you, yourself. And because your tiny little molecule of air can go shoot straight into your body, because that's what molecules of oxygen do. You kind of go through your breath into your body. And now you're going through your body and you're like seeing, holy cow, look at this amazing thing. And to a molecule, you know, a single cell is huge. You're inside a cell and the cell is itself kind of a galaxy, right? Kind of a star, rather like a star maybe. It's huge. It's got all these different machinery and proteins and things going around. And then you pop out of the cell and you look around and you see all these organs and all these different parts of your body. And really, it's quite majestic. It's just like being in the middle of a galaxy. And you see all these things and you go, wow, you feel the awe. And then as this molecule of air that you are right now, you start to grow and to kind of get bigger and bigger and kind of fill out the space inside the body. Maybe you're inside the stomach or the liver or kidney or something. You start to get bigger and bigger until you fill completely the space of your whole body and basically expand into this galaxy that you are and realize, holy cow, you are a galaxy. You have hundreds of billions of cells, trillions of cells, actually. And each cell is like a star. So it's not even just a metaphor that you're a galaxy. You are literally a galaxy of cells. And the cells in turn are, you know, little galaxies of molecules. And so there you are. And now you can open your eyes and look with your own eyes around you and realize, whew, you too are a galaxy. There are no puny galaxies. This is who you really are. And we're not making this up. And the fact that you can breathe on your own and go to bed and your heart beats even while you're asleep without any instructions from you, these are all miracles. And it's proof that the universe loves you. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. Okay? So I want you to experience that, because when you actually feel it, it's different. When it's visceral, it's different. And if you can somehow re-evoke that feeling during the day as you're walking around, you see a tree, hey, there's a galaxy of tree cells, right? You see another human, there's another, you know, galaxy person walking around. And when you come from this galaxy consciousness, you're just a much more empowered version of you, okay? And this feeds right into the whole notion of self-love. And you already love yourself. We already mentioned how you breathe on your own, your heart beats on your own. And, you know, that's the unconscious part of you that loves you, that's keeping you, that's sustaining you, that keeps you going. At the same time, you also ate this morning, you probably showered, and you buy yourself, you know, nice clothes, you don't buy yourself rags. So yes, you do love yourself, okay? That's the default setting. You are hardwired for it. We're all hardwired for it. But sometimes just might mix in some extraneous ingredients into it, like perfectionism, right? Which is really just a, you know, hedge against thinking, oh, well, people don't really like me. If I do this perfectionism thing, then I'll be perfect and people will love me and nobody will leave me. Then I'll be lovable, right? And shame, which is a close cousin of perfectionism, right? It's like, oh, so people find out about this, then oh, they won't like me. So you have to hide that. And there are antidotes to that, luckily. You just need to practice more gratitude. And that way, the more you're aware of all the blessings you have, the more the shame just kind of dissolves. And if you come from this galaxy consciousness thing, from that point of view, the shame just really doesn't have any space to live inside of you anymore. I just finished listening to this audiobook by Brené Brown. It's called The Power of Vulnerability. And I highly recommend you to take a listen. It really talks about all these things in a very cogent way and proposes solutions. Like, okay, you've got shame. What do you do with the shame? Hey, the antidote to shame is to practice more gratitude and also vulnerability. Vulnerability is a thing that brings people into your life as opposed to perfectionism. Perfectionism really is a problem. If you are listening to this right now, probably, I would say 20% of you have some kind of perfectionistic tendency, especially if you're a mom, especially if you're in the public eye. So all these things. Now, all this stuff that I'm talking about is really fundamental stuff. And I would like to think that I can transform your life and fix all these problems in a matter of 60 minutes. Maybe, but not entirely realistic. The way you change these things, the way you turn information into transformation is through practice, right? And so that's why I designed this 6-week online course called Project Irresistible. In the meantime, why don't we do a quick little exercise about the whole self-gratitude thing, okay? So gratitude being the antidote to a lot of these self-love issues, right? So right now, if you have something to write on, which I hope you do, whether it's your computer or a notepad, I want you to write down three things really quick. The first three things that come to mind that you're grateful for. And if you want to share it with me here on the chat box, then I can read them out loud to the rest of the group. And for me, three things. Got a great night's sleep in a comfortable, dry, bug-free bed. I had some fresh food for lunch this afternoon with a friend. And I get free oxygen all day long. So that's what I'm grateful for. Ah, yes. And it seems like we have a recovering perfectionist here in the audience. Thanks for chiming in. And yeah, so write down those three things. And just writing that is a reminder that, hey, you are surrounded by blessings. And if you make that a practice, whether you make it a once a week practice or a daily practice, what that does is it tunes your brain to the miracles in your life. The fact that, hey, there's all this stuff, there's all this blessing, and you know, most of it you don't even think about, you don't even ask for, but there it is. So make gratitude a daily practice, and that alone can transform your life. Okay. Great. So we have other people here with their little gratitude notes. Health, beautiful daughter, supportive, loving family and friends. My rescue dog, my best friends that have helped me get through a nasty breakup. And a big bowl of fresh cherries. Hell yeah. All right. And sometimes life can be a bowl of cherries. All right, so if you have questions about what I've talked about so far, please chime in. Otherwise, we're going to move right along to the next part of this webinar. I hate that word, but webinar, I mean seminar, okay, you know, web program, okay, but webinar, I suppose we have to deal with it. It's 2016. Okay, so what you really want? What do you really want? So before we go on, we're going to do a little exercise, another fun little exercise. So this is the genie with the three wishes exercise. And the key to this is to do it relatively quickly. I'm not going to give you like all day long to think about this, but I want you to imagine that a genie has appeared. You rub the lamp, genie appeared, and he's got three wishes for you. And don't get clever with me with the unlimited wishes thing. I want you to wish for three concrete things that you would like in your life if you were to have a genie that could grant you any wish. So, you know, you're thinking brand new Tesla, you know, a few million bucks in the bank, and maybe, I don't know, 6 inches taller or something. Something of that nature. But I want it to be three concrete things, okay? And when you're done with that, chime in over in the chat box over here and let me know you're done. I'll give you about a minute to finish that up. What you really want. The genie can grant you any three wishes. Write those down. Okay, I will assume that you have written them down. And if you are listening to this at home, please press the pause button, write your three wishes down, and then get back to us. Great. Now, here's the thing. I did this exercise myself, and I actually came up with the same result that most of you did, which is that none of you, almost none of you, I'm willing to bet, almost none of you came up with happiness as one of the three things. And yet, what everybody really wants out of life is happiness and some measure of fulfillment and joy, right? So people write down, I would like great relationships. They say, I would like a buttload of cash, right? But somehow happiness eludes them. And it's truly embarrassing for me because I call myself a happiness engineer. So what's happening here? What's happening here is that people usually write down intermediate goals. They write the means goals, the thing that will get them to the thing that they really want, but they forget the thing that they really want. And the thing you really want is happiness, right? Let's face it. You want happiness, you want fulfillment, you want joy. So similarly, in your love life, you're looking for happiness. You're looking for fulfillment. And fulfillment is not a person. Fulfillment is not some checklist of, you know, Prince Charming, Prince Perfect that you somehow find on the street or in aisle five of Whole Foods. Fulfillment is a set of feelings. It's a state of being, not a checklist. And I really want to emphasize this difference between the menu and the food. So menu is representation of food. Food is the real nourishment. And the checklist for the kind of guy you want, that's the menu. And the actual feelings of fulfillment that that guy can catalyze in your life, that is the actual food, okay? If you were to go to a really high-end restaurant, that's everything you always wanted, but you can only have the menu but not the food, would you be happy? Hell no. You would want the real thing. So only settle for the real thing. And I'm mentioning this, I'm beating this dead horse because the reason I came up with this whole Tao of Dating idea, the reason I wrote this book was because I saw so many lovely, amazing, smart women who were in really bad relationships because they had this idea, this mental model of the kind of guy they wanted, right? Some checklist. And they were with the checklist. And yet Mr. Checklist was emotionally or physically abusing her and she wasn't noticing. So I really want you to have a robust mental model of the kind of guy that you want. We're going to really get into this in the next section too, okay? And realize that the real thing, the guy that is going to be the catalyst to your long-term fulfillment and joy may look different from how you've imagined it up to this point. In fact, if up to now you have only dated men who are your type, so to speak, then, well, guess what? Maybe you should change the type, or maybe you should date somebody who's not your type, because if you're single now, that means that type didn't work out. So you may want to go for something else, okay? So let's do a really quick drill right now. In the next minute, I want you to write down a list of all the things you would want in a relationship, okay? And speed is important because when you do it quickly, that means it's coming up for the unconscious, the real stuff that's really important to you. So take a minute to write down at least 10 things that you really want in a relationship, and go up to 15. If you go up to 15, that's plenty. But write down 10 things. So, you know, happiness, joy, great sex, companionship, honesty, trust. You know, just go through the list. Take about a minute or two to compile that list. Okay, take a minute or two to do it. And if you're listening to this at home, go ahead, press pause, compile the list, do it quickly, a little flash list. Okay, once you've got a nice list there, go ahead and go through the list, and if you could have one and only one item on that list, what would that be? Circle that and put a one next to it. And then repeat that procedure four more times for me. Go through that list again with the remaining items. If you got only one of those, what would that be? Go through it and put a two next to it. Put a circle around it and put a two next to it. If you could have only one of those things, those remaining things, what would that be? Put a circle around it and put a three next to it. And do the same thing for number four and number five. So that would be your top five values in a relationship. These are the things that really matter to you. Okay. Now, what I want you to do is to close your eyes. Once again, if you are driving or operating heavy machinery, please do not close your eyes. Otherwise, close your eyes and make a mental picture of a relationship with a guy that has those qualities. Okay. So allow the picture to emerge from the qualities. You want trust, you want honesty, you want joy, you want fun, you want adventure, you want, great, physical intimacy, whatever it is that you want. Imagine that partner and then also imagine the nature of the bond. And you can maybe visualize the bond as some form of energy moving between you two, like this big column of energy moving from your belly to his belly, right? And right now, feel those feelings that would come corresponding to these most deeply held values of yours. You know, trust, support, love, intimacy, whatever it is. And put in some details too. See what it is, hear what it is, and feel what it's like most importantly. Okay? Because as you bring up all these vivid pictures and sounds and feelings, this becomes your North Star. This is the feeling you're looking for. This is how you will know that the person you're with is the right person. Okay. And we're doing this very quickly. However, you now have the tools. You can do this on your own. And maybe you've had this experience before with someone, or maybe you met someone who would be absolutely perfect for you and evoke these feelings, but maybe was not age appropriate for you, or maybe was already married to somebody else. Whatever it is, the source of that feeling, I want you to bring that feeling up, because that intangible and almost unnameable feeling is going to be your North Star for finding the right person, as opposed to some checklist. I mean, it's good to have deal breakers, right? You want to know what your deal breakers are, and you want to have a list of deal breakers that are super duper short. Like, I don't want this person to do drugs. I want this person to be single. I want this person to, speak my native language, like stuff that is really important to in a relationship. But beyond that, you want to make this feeling the thing that directs you towards the right kind of relationship. Okay. And this brings us to the whole idea of the science of peak performance and the importance of having a vivid mental representation of your goal. So this fellow by the name of Professor Anders Ericsson has been studying high performance for a very long time, 30 years. And you may have heard about him through Malcolm Gladwell's popularization of the concept of the 10,000-hour rule, which is actually not entirely accurate. But the idea is that it requires a lot of practice, 10,000 hours plus, in order to reach expert-level performance in anything, okay? And in order to get there, all these people who've gotten very, very good at something, whether it's a tennis stroke or playing a Beethoven sonata or cooking an amazing dish or having a great relationship. The way you get there is by having a vivid mental representation of the way something should be. Okay, so you want to know what that Beethoven sonata sounds like. You want to know what that tennis stroke feels like and looks like. You want to know what that dish tastes like and how it's laid out. Okay, and in the same manner, you want to know what that relationship looks like. Because if you don't have a vivid mental representation of that relationship, then you don't have anything to compare what you have to. And so you'll kind of take what you can get as opposed to design what you really want, right? And this taking what you can get thing is pretty endemic amongst relationships, but the relationships both for men and women. And what happens when you are in that kind of relationship is that you can get this thing called normalization of deviance. So the relationship could get slightly worse, right? But because you're only looking at it as it is, you're like, well, it's still okay, right? And then it gets slightly worse. And you also, you still don't have a base of comparison. So you're like, well, what's in front of me is, oh, I can handle this. This is good enough, right? So normalization of deviance means that things get worse and worse, but you normalize it and you think it's okay. And next thing you know, you're thinking, hey, he only yelled at me 5 times a day. That's okay. I can deal with that. Or I only have 1 black eye. That's okay. No, it's not okay. So what I want you to do is to have this vivid mental representation of what you want and compare whatever you have to that, okay? Now, we're not talking about some completely idealized notion of the person you want to be with, the relationship you want to be with, but I want it to be something that's fulfilling, meaningful, and nourishing for you as opposed to something that's potentially toxic. And the way you do that is by having a vivid and robust mental representation, and you start here by constructing that inside your mind, okay? Now, the other thing that Anders Ericsson talks about is that the way you get skill is through this thing called deliberate practice. This means that you go and you do something just to get better at it. And deliberate practice always involves pushing against your comfort zone. So you're always doing something that's slightly uncomfortable. It's a little bit beyond your current ability, because that's how you get expertise. That's how you get top level performance. That's how you get growth. That's almost a definition of growth. I mean, we've all heard this expression called growing pains. And you know, when a kid's growing, it actually involves a little bit of discomfort. So, and you know, I'm hugely grateful that you ladies are here listening to this talk, and maybe you've even read my book, and that's excellent. And that's all knowledge, which is the first step. In the book, I also have 19 exercises, and the exercise is how you actually turn that information into some idea of actual skill. Transformation. Okay. Now, here's the thing. I've read hundreds of self-help books and even conducted seminars like this one. And, you know, some people think I may even know a little something about self-help myself because I teach it, right? And yet it would seem as if a perfect life has somehow eluded me in spite of all this knowledge. Okay. Because I happen to know that we don't remember everything that we read, no matter how useful that information is. But even beyond that, even if you were to remember it, you're not implementing everything that you learn. So deliberate practice is really important here. So I'm giving you a whole lot of information here today that you can go and use for deliberate practice. So you're totally welcome to do that. But knowing how humans operate, that's really hard to do. It's hard to transform your life, change your behavior through just a book, through just a seminar, through just information wafting through the air. And the way you turn information into transformation is through practice, which is why I designed this thing called Project Irresistible for you ladies. It's this online course. It's usually self-paced. You can go through it in 6 weeks or longer if you want, but I recommend 6 weeks. And a week from today, on the 19th of July, I'm starting a new cohort, which means that instead of just doing the course on your own, you can have a partner. You can do it with a whole bunch of people, like-minded individuals. And that way you get weekly assignments and you're motivated to do them. There's deliberate practice to do. You're more motivated to do it because you have a partner who's doing it with you and you keep each other accountable. And you'll also get weekly live coaching calls from me to answer your questions, help you overcome hurdles, and you know, maybe spark the light to be a little more motivated. And the course has been $247 up to now, and I'm going to be adding more material to it, and the price is going to go up in the near future. By near future, I mean like next week. But if you sign up before midnight tonight, you get a deal of $100 off if you use the code UNICORN, because guess what? You are the unicorn. And so use the code UNICORN. You can sign up for $147. So I'm going to put this in the chat box here. Code is UNICORN. And site you go to is projectirresistible.com. It's written just the way you heard me say it. It's spelled just the way, just projectandirresistible.com. And there's a big fat button there that says enroll now. You click on that, you put in the code UNICORN, and you get $100 off. And before we jump back into the rest of the seminar, I just want to put this in perspective. So my hourly consult rate is somewhere between $200 and $400, depending on whether it's a personal client or a corporate client. So you get 6 weeks of coaching, unlimited access to the entire Project Irresistible online course. You get me coming on the coaching calls, and plus a new bunch of friends to practice this stuff. And it's all for less than it would cost me for just an hour. So if you've always wanted to do this, now is a good chance to sign up. You don't have to do it next week. You can do it with the next cohort, and you can just do it at your own pace if you want to. But the point is, if you've always wanted to make a big change in your life, especially in this area of your life, then perhaps it's time to do something a little differently from what you've done before, and to, you know, put some effort into it and do some deliberate practice. I'm going to ask you to do stuff that's completely out of your comfort zone. It's not going to be necessarily easy, but I'm hoping that this will kind of jumpstart your love life into the next energy level. And of course, you can all this information is available for free online. I mean, the web is there. Everything is out there. I've just organized it and directed it in a way that can accelerate your progress. And if you want to do that, that would be awesome. Would love to have you. And let's talk about some good guys now. But before we go into the good guys, questions. We're at the halfway point. If you have questions, now is a good time to throw them at me. Yes. So the other thing is, when you join, it's kind of a lifetime thing, or as long as the website still functions. So you can, if you joined Project Irresistible before, then you can join us again. If you'd like to do it now and then do it later again with a new cohort, you can do that. So yes, if you have joined Project Irresistible at some point in the past, you may do it again with us. I'll be sending an email to everybody who signed up in the past so you can join the cohort. Great question. There are a bunch of questions beneath the screen. Questions? Oh, questions are down here. Oh, thank you. See, this is what happens when you're using a piece of software the first time. Okay, here's a question. Okay, great. Here's one question from Susan. As a therapist and a woman whose disposition is warm, open, and inviting, I seem to have great difficulty discerning between men who are just enjoying conversation, men who are in need of a therapeutic ear, men who are interested in friendship, or men who are interested in deeper connection. My instincts fail me every time, which has created anxiety and desire to shut down with men in general. What should I do? Help! Okay, that's a great question. I will cover some of that in the next section on good guys. And if the question still persists, then we'll get to that. Okay. How can I possibly feel normal again after leaving an abusive relationship? Wow, that's a big one. And, well, abusive relationships are tough because they kind of hit at the core of who you are. You start to doubt your own self-worth, and you're thinking, oh, who would want me now? And, you know, I have not had the experience that you've had, but I had a really unpleasant breakup about this time last year. And so the antidote to that is more gratitude. Just practice more gratitude and, you know, meditate. So a big thing that we're going to emphasize in Project Irresistible is meditation. And I'll see if I can get a 2-minute meditation in the webinar today. But the idea is, the more you become familiar with your own thoughts as an observer of those thoughts, the less you start to identify with those thoughts. So this whole idea of, you know, your mental chatter going, I'm not worthy, right? Then if you meditate enough times and your mind gets fit enough such that you can see those thoughts as only thoughts and not as you, then the thoughts kind of go by and you could replace them with new thoughts. And like, what a beautiful day. Or look, the world loves me. It's giving me free gravity and free oxygen today. And you know, I am a lovable person because the universe already loves me. Therefore, what other proof do I need? So this stuff needs to be overcome with, again, deliberate practice. You want to practice this gratitude exercise, three things a day, maybe first thing in the morning, maybe last thing at night, meditate more. And I would also recommend listening to that Brené Brown audiobook. It's really good. I don't get a cut. She's just awesome. So it's called The Power of Vulnerability. And it covers a lot of that stuff. Okay. Here's another one. How can we screen in the early stages for men with avoidant attachment style and fear of intimacy? It seems like there's a lot of avoidance in the dating pool, and it's not always a case of being extremely obvious. You are correct. I'm going to give you some rubrics coming right up in the good guys section for telling what kind of guys are good for you. And this is new material. I haven't even put it up on the blog yet. This is brand spanking new. I think it's pretty useful. Okay. When a man posts a pic of him and a woman on his Facebook page, does he think why he is doing it, that it must be sending a message to the woman in the world, or is he really vain? Okay, so I don't know. And generally speaking, I don't do mind reading, and you should not either. It does not matter why a guy does something. What matters is how it makes you feel. If it makes you feel like you are valued and he is valuing you and it makes you feel like a better version of yourself, great. But if a man is ignoring you, he does strange things, he posts pictures of himself because he's vain, you don't need to know why. You have a limited amount of mental energy and is best spent on growing and flourishing and making other people grow and flourish around you. Okay, so these are great questions. Here's another one. I just got out of a 10-year relationship. I think the major reason was me consistently indulging in emasculating behavior. Is there a chance I can repair this if the guy is already dating someone? I wish I had read your book a few years ago. Wow. Okay. That's a very honest question from SJ. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, so, you know, I run these seminars and I write books and I write articles. And the underlying premise of all these pieces is that women are God's gift to the world. And it's true. You are. At the same time, you can also screw up. And this whole idea of emasculating behavior is one of them. And how do you prevent that? You say, is there a chance if I can repair this if the guy is already dating someone? And to that, I would say, the repair thing is much harder than starting fresh with somebody else. And chances are that guy may not have been a good match for you anyway. Maybe he was bringing out that kind of emasculating behavior in you. That's always a possibility. So if you think this is a chronic thing, then, well, we can talk about that. But sometimes certain guys just bring the worst out in us and certain people, actually. And we're going to talk about that in this next section. Let's talk about good guys. Good guys. So for those of you who have read The Dial of Dating, I talk about the two things you want to look for in a guy. One is spine, which is a metaphor for strength and competence, right? The ability to move through the world and get stuff done. And the other is heart, compassion, kindness, generosity, all those positive feelings, qualities of that nature, the softness. Now, if you have a guy who has spine but no heart, I call him Biff. You got a guy who has heart but no spine, I call him Lance. If you got a guy who has both heart and spine, I call him Victor. So you want to be aiming for a victor, okay? Now, what does a victor look like? I don't know. Why don't we construct him in your imagination so you have a clear mental representation of that, okay? So that way, when he does show up, you can spot him. So right now, I want you to close your eyes and imagine, what will your victor look like, okay? So, and I'm going to give you three criteria by which to judge what this person is going to look like. And it's not the size of his nose or his biceps or the color of his hair. It's qualities. It's qualities that matter in a relationship. So we're talking about the connection at three different chakra levels. So the head, that's the intellectual component, right? And you're maybe thinking, hey, when I'm with him, we have good conversation. It's very stimulating and fun. Okay, then you're thinking, heart, I feel love and loved back. Okay, I feel a deep, intimate connection with this person. Okay, and then the groin, that's the third level connection, right? I feel attraction at a visceral level. Okay, and I've mentioned the groin third, but it's actually the foundation. You need that. There's no way around that. Otherwise, you're dealing with your brother, and how fun is that? It's kind of creepy, actually. So you want to kind of start with that visceral body connection, right? And then have that heart connection, have that head connection, and then imagine what a guy like that would look like, okay? And let your unconscious come up with a picture. And more important, come up with that feeling of that three-level connection with that guy. You have this hologram of a dude in front of you. What does that three-level feeling actually feel like in your body? And that, again, is like that North Star. It's a very similar thing, okay? And that's how you know you got yourself a good guy, when the feeling that this person evokes in your presence is similar to the feeling that you just concocted right here in your own imagination. Okay. Once again, the whole idea of mental representations. So now, how do you know if a guy is a good guy? And is this guy going to be a good match for you in the long run? So there's a compatibility issues, and that's complicated and we probably outside the scope of this 1 hour webinar. However, there are quick ways of figuring out whether somebody is actually a good companion for you. And it's really not just for boyfriends or husbands. It's really for anybody, for friends in general. Like, is this person a good person in my life? Does this person have your back? Okay. So I've got five criteria for you. Okay. And the first one is, does this person have your back? Is this person generally supportive of you? Is this person the kind of person who hears some crazy idea you have and says, hey, tell me more? Or is the person says, that's just stupid, right? Does this person bail you out when you're in a jam? Does this person offer help to the extent of his or her ability or to the extent of his or her convenience? So if you very quickly know whether somebody has your back or not. So that's the first question I want you to think about. Does this person have my back? The second one is, does this person make me an option or a priority? Now, in dating, that's particularly relevant because, well, when we're dating, initially we start out with a lot of options, different guys you meet via different media, okay? And so you're thinking, oh, Friday night, who would I want to hang out with, right? And maybe you pick one of them, right? But if somebody really cares for you, somebody actually thinks that you matter in his or her life, then that person will make you a priority. And you very quickly know whether that person makes you an option or a priority. Last minute cancellations, you're probably just an option, right? Something else came up that they thought was better. Whereas somebody calls you a week in advance and says, hey, I've got tickets to the symphony. I want you to come with me because you said you're into that. Guess what? That person just made you a priority. So you want to make a priority in your life, people who make you a priority, and you want to probably invest less in those people who make you an option. All right, number three is, does this person treat you as a means to an end or an end in yourself? And Immanuel Kant has something like this too. And the idea is, hey, are you just a way for this person to get to something else? Or do you actually count as a worthy goal in yourself? Is hanging out with you and your company something that's intrinsically worthwhile? And again, if you pose that question in your mind, you immediately know what the answer is, okay? And the final one, which is kind of a summation of the other four ones. Actually, it's the fourth one. Sorry, one more to go. So the fourth one is, does this person drain my energy or add to it? So in the end, we're all these bundles of life force. And certain people add to that life force and other people are kind of like energy vampires, like, they just suck us dry. And afterwards, you're like, God, why do I feel so weak and depleted, right? So again, how does it work? Who knows? But you know who those people are. So spend more of your time with the people who give you energy and add life energy to your existence, and spend less time with ones who drain energy from you. And finally, this is kind of a summation of the other four, but also a criterion in and of itself, is, do you feel like a better version of yourself in this person's presence or a worse version of yourself? I have friends and I hang out with them, and within minutes, I find myself gossiping, saying snarky stuff about people walking down the street and just being a generally just snarky person. And I'm like, I don't like this version of me, but it's in there, right? And then other people, I start hanging out with them and I feel like this expansive, generous, kinder, gentler, happier version of myself, more joyous. I'm like, huh, that's interesting. So people catalyze different versions of you. And I would suggest that you spend more of your time with the people who catalyze the better versions of you than the other ones. So Now, not everybody's going to be one way all the time. And a big issue, especially with manipulative people, is that they're kind of hot and cold. They go one way, then they go the other way. And the hot and cold thing, the give a little and then take a little, take a lot more, that's actually the structure of addiction. That's how your brain gets super addicted to somebody or something, right? So those are the ones you should avoid even more than the people who are like nasty all the time or nice all the time. So actually, you shouldn't avoid the people who are nice all the time. You should hang with them. But I'm saying, you know, nothing is going to be 100% pure one way or the other. So just be cognizant of that and know how you want to feel. Again, having a strong mental representation of how it is you want to feel around the person that you are going to spend a lot of time in companionship with. And know that you want to be the best possible version of you, because in the end, what are we here on earth for? We're here to give our gift to the world and be the best possible version of ourselves and be of service to the world. So if there's somebody who diminishes our energy, somebody who takes that away from us, well, you know, it'd be selfish of you to hang out with that person, because that means that they're getting in the way of your ability to be of service to the world. They're getting in the way of you being able to give your gift to the full extent possible. Okay, so this whole idea of, you know, sacrificing, this whole idea of like the Whitney Houston syndrome, no, I'm going to stay with my alcoholic, druggy husband, because that's not cool, because you have a gift that's far bigger than that relationship that you need to be giving to the rest of the world. So those are the five criteria: has your back, option versus priority, means versus end, drains energy or adds it, better self versus worse self. And I want to talk about some practical matters too. So we've got another 15, 20 minutes here, including the Q&A. So where do you find these good guys? And I want to bring to your attention that the good guys are everywhere if you have a discerning eye. However, they will congregate in certain places more than others. And also certain venues bring out more of the good guy in a guy than others. So if you meet a guy in a church, you're going to get one version of him. If you meet him at some loud bar or club, you're going to meet a completely different version of him. And these would be the same person, okay? And some of you who have maybe been married before, you know what I'm talking about. There's different versions of people depending on context. So the places that are good for meeting good guys are places that have the three C's. So the three C's are conversation, community, and continuity. So conversation is pretty simple. You want a place where you can actually be heard and hear the other person, because what you're doing in the process of dating is you're gathering accurate information about what kind of person you're dealing with. That's the most important thing. And if it's too loud, like it's a bar or a concert, guess what? You're not going to be able to get that useful information very clearly. And then you want a sense of community. The idea is that, look, why are we talking to each other? Because we have friends in common. We have some interests in common. We both study, I don't know, Amazon ecology, and we're at this conference. Therefore, there's some sense of community. And that's important, not just because you want somebody who is similar to you in these ways and maybe shares your interests, but also because of safety. If somebody has a connection with you, some kind of social connection with you pre-existing, then they're much less likely to do crazy, silly, dangerous things to you, okay? So it's both the whole idea of familiarity and also some notion of safety. And finally, continuity. So for the past 2-3 million years of human evolution, the way people got to know each other was that, well, you're in this tribe of about 150 people, and you know one another since birth. And, you know, when you're 15, 16, 17, 18, hormones kick in, you know who you're dealing with. You know who their family is. You know who their friends are. You know everything about them, okay? So only in this modern era can you pluck somebody out of the ether that you've never met before and try to have some kind of meaningful interaction with them. Well, that's hard to do. So what you really want to do in dating is to get accurate information about who this person is, what they're all about. And the way you do that is through continuity, through repeated contact, which is why something like night school is a great place to meet people, because guess what? You've got 12 classes. Over the course of 12 classes, you'll get to meet this person in a casual context. It's not some kind of hot date where you're both performing for each other or send each other's representatives to meet each other. No, it's right there. It's real. You want to meet these people in the context of work. You want to meet these people in the context of some kind of family function, maybe yoga classes you go to repeatedly, maybe some conference that goes on for 7 days. Some notion of continuity. This whole idea of isolated points of data somehow adding up to a person, that's hard to do. So we'll get into that a little bit later. So the whole purpose of the three C's is to get longitudinal, accurate information about someone in a safe context. So remember those three C's and their corresponding venues to that. So in the dial of dating, I mentioned 13 of them. I'm going to mention three or four of them right now. So the best one is dinner parties, because dinner parties, usually people know one another and there's usually a host. Ideally, the host is you. Guess what? You can do this yourself. You can assemble a bunch of people. It's a really great way to actually see how people interact and what they're really about. Meeting people through friends, I highly recommend that. Again, they're networked in. It's somebody that's connected to other people that you know, and that makes a big difference. Shared activities. There are meetup groups for almost any kind of activity that you would want to have in this world, and you can find that in your locality. That said, you can also go to classes, you know, whether it's spinning or yoga, or you're going to go collect some shells on the beach, or there's an archaeology group, or knitting, whatever. Okay, knitting, not so great. Probably not going to be a lot of guys there. But if there is, guess what? That means you can knit together. And you can also just create these communities out of sheer nothing. I want you to do that. I want you to take initiative. You are not a potted plant. You can take control of your own destiny when it comes to these things. Gather around a whole bunch of people. You can be the one who throws the Sunday brunches, does the book swaps, or organizes the hiking trip. You can be the hub, okay? And if you don't want to organize that, you know, there's pre-existing organizations like churches and other activities that you're already engaging in. These are all really good ways of meeting guys. And good guys, for that matter. And notice also what I did not mention, okay? I did not mention bars. I had not mentioned nightclubs as good places, dating sites or dating apps. Because all those things that I just mentioned are not rigged for your happiness. They're rigged for somebody else to make money off of you. Basically, you are the commodity in those contexts. And guess what? You will not be commoditized. That's right. Because guess what? You are the goddess. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit too. Okay? So one thing that I wanted to bring up before we move on to the part about attraction is that the guy who could be your partner is very likely someone you know already, okay? So what are you talking about? Yes, it's true. The person who may end up as your long-term partner is very likely to be somebody you already know. And this kind of harkens back to the whole story of the alchemist and how this guy goes off searching for this treasure somewhere, and then turns out the treasure was right underneath his feet in his own garden the entire time. So the point is, you may think that you know these guys that you're hanging out with, that you know through various social connections and things that you do, but do you really? Do you really? I mean, they have this thing called the 36 questions that a psychologist came up with. And if you just go online and Google 36 questions, it'll pop up. So this guy came up with this list of 36 questions. And it's questions like, if you could invite any three people to dinner, any one person to dinner, who would it be and why, right? What's your favorite childhood memory? Or, you know, it's 36 questions that this guy actually gave to couples who had been together for years, some of them married for like a decade or more. And the answers to things were completely novel. These two people did not even know each other. So if a couple that's been married for 20 years cannot fully know each other, guess what? You don't fully know these coworkers of yours, these former classmates of yours, these current classmates of yours. You may have brushed them aside. You may have thought, oh, not so interesting. And then what? In favor of what? In favor of the new guy, the new and exciting one, because our brain is trained to be hardwired for neophilia. Our brain wants to see new things. Our brain just is looking for the novelty. And somehow the novelty is better? I don't know. Maybe, but maybe not. There's no reason why the novelty should be better. The point is, the treasure you're looking for may be something that's already in your backyard. So check your backyard first before you go off and try to find a whole bunch of other stuff, okay? And you might be surprised by what you find. So let's get into the final part of this webinar, which is attraction. So important. What is this attraction thing? How do you attract men? How does this work? So people often ask me when I tell them about my book, it's like, oh, wow, you wrote this book. That's so nice. Can you summarize it for me in a minute? And of course, you know, the first few years that this happened, I'd be like, whoa, 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 I wrote 70,000 words. You want me to summarize it in a minute? But, you know, you live, you learn. So I actually have this down to three words. And the three words are be the light. Okay? And what does that mean? That means that, look, you have two choices. You can either say, ah, my butts don't look good in these jeans, or ah, I'm having a bad hair day, or ah, my skin's not great, or ah, my shape's just wrong, or these guys, I'm not just not their type, right? But the thing is, even if your butt did look in those jeans, even if your skin was perfect and you had amazing hair, guess what? All of those things can be taken away from you. That's not real power. On the other hand, at any point in your life, you have the power to go up to someone and make them feel like $1 million. You can do that with a word of praise. Oh, wow, I really like what you did with that presentation at work. Oh, wow, love this outfit you've put together. Hey, I just really appreciate that, you know, you're always looking out for us. Genuine appreciation, right? Looking somebody in the eye, acknowledging their existence, saying you are real and I like you and I think you're really cool. When you do that, people light up. And when you light other people up, guess what? You light up. Why? Because we are hypersocial beings. We have mirror neurons. You make somebody else feel good, you feel good. You spend $20 on somebody else, it feels better than you spending that money on yourself. This has been proven scientifically, but you already know it's really deep down inside, okay? So that means that when you are the light, you have power. And this power cannot be taken away from you. Moreover, you will feel good when you're the light because you're making other people feel fantastic. When you feel fantastic, everybody else notices too. They're like, who is that glow in the dark woman? I want to be around that. So now, not only are you not coming from a place of neediness and you already feel good, but you've already got this bunch of people around you and you can kind of have your pick of the litter, okay? And this is real power. This is power that cannot be taken away from you. And it's also power that very few people choose to exercise. I mean, when's the last time you gave a guy a compliment? For some of you, that answer is never. For some of you, the answer is it has, you know, 10 years, a year. When did you last make somebody else feel fantastic about themselves? When did you last express genuine appreciation about anything? So if you were to make genuine appreciation a daily practice, your whole life will transform. There is no question about that. Why? Because you will feel great and you will strengthen the bonds you have with all the people that you know around you and make brand new bonds. And it also perpetuates these bonds through time. Okay? So that's one big part of your power. Another big part of your power is your feminine sexual power. Okay? Now, sexual power used incorrectly can be a huge liability and very, very messy. Okay? But used correctly, it can be an enormous force that can absolutely drive men wild and the right kind of guy wild. Okay. So the idea is that you have this beam of power, and you can direct it. But in order to direct it, you have to first acknowledge that you have it and also generate it and cultivate it. And for the knowledge worker, I mean, we're in the 21st century and we're all pretty much knowledge workers. We manipulate symbols to make our daily bread, which is really weird if you think about it. It hasn't been that way for most of history, okay? When you do that, and when you spend most of your day living above of the shoulder line, then guess what? You may forget that there's other stuff there, the body. You want to be inhabiting the body. So we're going to do one final exercise, one drill, and this one is going to look a little bit silly. So I hope you're in a place where you can do this. So stand up. I'm standing up with you right now. Okay, put your hands on your hips, arms akimbo, and just doing that, you're going to feel a little bit more empowered, just kind of open up your chest and feel the breath really coming into your body. And now what I want you to do, as you've got that Wonder Woman pose with your feet just a little bit wider than usual, okay, I want you to move your hips around in a circle. And then after you've done a few rotations and you feel the creakiness coming out of your spine, then move it around in a figure eight. Okay, figure eight. Okay, good. And notice if you're doing that, you're kind of shimmying, kind of using your hips. You're activating all this energy. This is where the Kundalini lives, the Kundalini energy, the base of your spine. The Taoists also have a word for that. It's called Qi. And maybe you can feel that energy moving down into your body, all the way down into your toes, then moving up your body, up into your back, your chest, your arms, all the way to the top of your head. So it's fully inhabiting your body. You're just stoking your body with energy like a furnace, okay? And then I want you to imagine that you have beams of light on the sides of your hips and then the front and back of your hips as well. And as you're making these figure eights, these beams of light kind of sweeping across the landscape and zapping people, and they're like, oh, you know, they're just fainting from the magnitude of your power, just like that, okay? And I know this sounds terribly silly, but if you do it, it kind of feels good. You can imagine that happening. It's like zoom, zoom, zoom. And this is your power. You do have that. And I'm kind of saying this as an act of imagination, but when a woman moves her hips around like that, it's kind of like being zapped by a beam of light. As a guy, I can tell you, it really does work. So this whole course, you know, Project Irresistible, this seminar we just had together, it's all about the whole person, okay? An integration of all the different parts of you, such that all of you shows up for your next relationship. And if you spend most of your life living from the neck up, or if you spend most of your life living from the waist down, or however it is, right? Well, you want to tune back into your body, tune back into your whole self. And what I recommend is yoga, especially Kundalini yoga, that really gets you back into your body, okay? And ecstatic dance, that's a movement that's been going around. Totally self-unconscious dance movement and other people doing it. Just kind of get into that energy, okay? And when you do stuff like that, when you cultivate your inner fire, then everybody notices. And amongst that, everybody will be guys. And amongst those guys will be the good guys that you actually want to hang out with, okay? And they will want to be around you like a fire in a hearth. And you are going to be that fire. And in the end, everybody that you meet is an opportunity for you to practice being more loving. I mean, all the stuff that I've talked about today, you know, you want to be practicing this all the time. And whether it's for a minute, you're at some checkout counter and the person does a great job of packing your groceries for you, there's an opportunity to open your heart and be more loving and express appreciation and gratitude. Or whether it's a 10, 20, 30 year relationship, that's again, practice. You're always practicing. Okay. And exercise like these concepts I'm giving to you will have you doing a lot more of those during the Project Irresistible course. And once again, if you sign up by the end of day today, you can use the discount code UNICORN to bring the price down from an already reasonable $247 to $147, which I hope is something within the realm of reason and affordable for everybody. And that way you can get in with the July 19th cohort. And the idea is to feel like you're in a part of a like-minded group of people and also have some notion of accountability, which is so important when we're trying to make change in our lives. Otherwise, if it's just you, well, if that just you thing worked, it would have worked by now maybe, right? I know how hard this is because I've been trying to, you know, engineer change in my own life as well. I know it's really hard to do on your own. So this way, you're with other people. The information is there for you. You can use again and again, come back to it. And I'm always adding to it. And if you've always wanted to take action to improve this aspect of life, here's your chance. So go forth and practice being more thing. That is the information I have for you today. Thank you so much for your attention. And I'm now open for questions. If you have more questions, go ahead and post them. Okay, and I have some interesting notes here. Sonia says, my friend was a sterling example of making everyone he ever encountered, from homeless man on the street to CEO, feel like $1 million. He calls it radiate and receive. And I channel the memories of watching him and see amazing results. And guess what? That is available to you for free all day, every day. Go forth and use it. Okay, so we have questions here. Let's see. More questions. So 10-year relationship. Okay. Tips on dealing with a sociopath or narcissist. That's an excellent question. So I gave you the five criteria, right? So the five criteria, once again, let's go through them. And we have, this person has your back. This person makes you a priority, not an option. This person treats you as an end versus just a means to ends. And this person gives energy to your life as opposed to draining it. And this person brings out your better self and not your worst self. And I think a sociopath or a narcissist would fail on 4 or 5 of those 5. So I would say don't hang out with them. One of the key concepts is that, you know, you're grown women, you should look for fully grown men. To a certain extent, men are trainable, and I do say that in my book. However, you're looking for prefab. You want a guy who's already done his work, who's already where you want him to be so he can meet as equals. You are not an animal trainer. Excellent question. Okay. Let's see. Okay. At all the things you were saying, and though we were so happy, I had a guy, he had my back, he made me his priority, and we talked as if we'd be together for always. I was so in love with him, and he broke up with me. There was an energy drain, though. He had extreme anger issues, and it did wear on me. But I can't get over him. Any tips? Okay, so here's another thing. So this mental representation thing is a major big deal. Why? Because in 14 years that I've been doing this, and the last 7 of them has been exclusively for women, I've received, I don't know, a few thousand letters from the ladies, and pretty much none of them actually mention what you want. So these questions are similar. So, you know, here's a guy, I can't get over him, any tips? Well, what do you want, Helena? That's the thing, right? Do you want anger in your life? Do you want to be tiptoeing around eggshells? Do you want to have the energy drain, or do you want a relationship that nurtures you, catalyzes your best self, makes you feel like the queen of the universe, makes you feel like the goddess? You know, you always have a choice between being goddess or flower girl. And, you know, here's the thing. You have a phone number, and if you get 9 out of 10 digits right, it's still completely wrong, right? So the guy gets 4 out of 5 right, but he's got anger issues, and he makes you feel drained and unhappy. Probably not the right guy for you. So it's important to have It's more to know what your deal breakers are. And I think anger issues, any kind of violence, emotional abuse, those are things that you simply should not tolerate. Now, it's possible that people go through rough patches and they have difficulties. So, you know, they can go and train themselves to cope better. But it should never be your responsibility to put up with that. Okay. More questions. More questions. Let's see what we have here. All right. I'm in my mid-50s and finding a gem at this stage is difficult. Hard to meet quality men with the 5 criteria is a challenge. Okay. I'm going to hazard a guess that there's no question there. No question mark even. So let's turn that into a question. But I understand what you're talking about. I understand where you're coming from. So it is true that women have more life expectancy than men. And so as you get older and older, it becomes slightly more challenging. In fact, once you get to beyond 50 and 60 years of age, the ratio starts becoming less and less favorable, and there are fewer single available men. That said, you don't need 10,000 of them. You just need one good one. So you want to be able to go to the places that I mentioned. You want to create opportunities. You want to engage in the kind of activities that you normally engage in that kind of gladden your heart and give you enjoyment and fulfillment and satisfaction. And there you're more likely to find the kind of guy who also meshes with you. Also, if you live in a smaller town, it's going to be a little more difficult than if you live in a bigger town. So I generally shoo people away from online dating just because it's so much better to meet people in person. You get so much more accurate information. However, if you are in that demographic of above, you know, 55, then online may be a way to find those rare specimens in your neighborhood because, you know, sometimes it's just hard to go to the venue and find them. So hope that's helpful. Let's see. Okay. More questions. Yes. And we have another comment here. If you're over 70, it gets even more difficult. I would have to agree with that. Let's see. I'm dating a man who said that he broke up with his last girlfriend because she wanted to analyze their relationship. Do you think this is a red flag? Okay, so I don't know. So I don't have a lot of detail on this. However, the question is, how did this guy make you feel? Did you feel like the kind of person you want to be in a relationship? Did you have that level, that connection at those 3 different levels? That's what really matters. I think it's important to get some kind of inventory of what happened before with a guy, but at the same time, to not put too much stock in it, especially if it happened a long time ago. Now, if a guy is coming off of two divorces, you know, the stats aren't very good for you. You know, second marriage lasts shorter than the first marriage, third marriage even shorter than the second marriage. So those are important things to know. However, I'm not quite sure what you mean by the girlfriend want to analyze the relationship. So that's like two levels of mind reading that I cannot do. First of all, the guy and then the girlfriend of the guy. So what I tend to stick with is, how does this guy make you feel? Do you want to be around him? If so, then continue and gather more accurate information and make a decision based on that. And also ask your friends how you are together. So that's a really good measure of whether a guy is good for you or not. Because once you're in a relationship, especially if you're in love, you just lose all sense of perspective. You have no idea whether a guy is actually good for you. Your friends will tell you. So if there's a unified chorus of them saying yay or nay, you should listen to that. Oh, here's a really good question here. How do you engage a good guy without seeming needy? Thank you for that one, Lisa. Okay, so needy. What is needy? So to me, needy is like this, you know, energy abyss that's trying to draw things in, right? And the only way, if you're needy, if you've forgotten to be the light, because if you're being the light, then you are projecting energy outwards. You have infinite energy within you, right? And if you don't, just go stand in the sun for a few minutes and you will have infinite energy within you. And you can be giving that. And if you're engaged in being the light, then neediness will never be a problem. If you do feel like you're being needy, then you shouldn't do anything drastic. You shouldn't call him. You shouldn't ask him out. You shouldn't make a call and like unload on him. You should do something that makes you feel whole and self-sufficient again, whether it's something like a hobby that you enjoy, going for a run, hanging out with friends, until you can feel replete again. So you can replete your reserves of energy. And then from there, you can be a much better version of yourself and come from a place of not neediness, but from a place of offering something, energy, joy, all the good things that people want to be. The question you want to answer whenever you're encountering a guy is like, this thing that I'm about to do, which of his prayers is that answering, right? So if you're being needy, most guys aren't sitting around thinking, God, I really want a big black hole of energy in my life right now. If you're being snarky or sarcastic, I mean, you have people writing on their profiles, I'm really sarcastic. It's like, what prayer is that answering? I'm not quite sure, but it's not something that I, as a guy, actively go and seek out. Okay, so... So I wish I could hear you. This interface can allows you to write, but does not allow me to hear your voices. But you're getting some great questions here. So let's see. Okay. Okay. So here's a question about a guy who lives 2,000 miles away. So this man always chooses a woman he's comfortable with. He never has sexual attraction with them, breaks up with them. We have great attraction, but he lives 2,000 miles away. How can I convince him to come see me again? And when he says he wants to, but he's still, okay, this is complicated, but I'll boil this down to its essence. If a guy lives 2,000 miles away, you should go for a guy who lives closer. In the end, you know, the guy who's going to be your companion is special, but he's not that special. So here's a thought experiment for you. So imagine you're in a city and everybody in that city is paired up. So everybody on that city, there's someone who thinks that this person is the most special, most amazing person in the world. Okay. Did that? Okay. And guess what? That means that all of them are wrong because not everybody can be the most special person in the world. So whoever is going to be your companion will be pretty special, but not really that special. Right? I mean, we're all human in the end. So, I like the supermarket metaphor. So if you want food, you're not going to go to the supermarket that's 20 miles across town. You'll probably go to the one that's closer to you, because guess what? It just makes more sense, right? If there's some incredibly rare object that only that one supermarket has, say, you have to go to Zabar's to get that, this one particular smoked salmon, I get that, but that's not your daily food. That's like a one-time thing. Okay, so you want to have a fling with a guy who's loaded and he lives 2,000 miles away? Great, but this should not be your daily nourishment. Your daily nourishment, namely your long-term intimate relationship, should come from somebody who's nearby. A long-distance relationship is no relationship at all. Take my word for it. A lot of people think that, oh, long distance, that can work. Terrible idea. Okay. Kate says, I met a great guy who was making me a priority and fit the five criteria. I accidentally got scared and accidentally used the relationship word too soon, even though that's not what I want to do. I feel like I'm being ruled by my fears. I'm now doing a daily yoga and meditation practice. Is there anything I can do to continue dating this guy? Okay, so I probably need a little more data around this, but the fact is the fear is temporary. The fear is coming from neediness, okay? So if you are going out there and charging yourself up and coming from a place of giving and being the light, then you're probably going to feel a lot less fear. The fear is also dangerous because when you're in that fear mode, you're going to go and try to get the guy back no matter what, even if the guy's not that great for you. So I would say go and get charged up and come from that place of being the light. And if you're still interested, you know, take a little time, come from that energy and give him a ring. And if you're coming from a place of genuine caring, you know, if he doesn't like that, then that's not your problem. That's his problem. Okay. Great question. I'm 54 years young in heart and mind. Don't rule out younger guys. They are often more enlightened and appreciative of a goddess. Yeah. You know what? I've met three women who really embody the goddess. I mean, three women who just had that energy and, you know, I didn't tell them, but they could have had anything they wanted. They wanted my left kidney, no problem, because what? You are the goddess. And every one of them was a woman who was like 10 years or so older than me. And they just had that and they just had that energy. And if you think about it, yeah, these goddess-like women and a lot of these younger guys are like, oh, wow, I want to be around that because she knows what's up. And, you know, when you are a fully grown woman in full possession of your powers, that's something that a 22-year-old simply cannot compete with, okay? And here's the other thing. Once you really get this stuff down, you really get control of your energy, all different kinds of energy that you have, your wisdom energy, your sexual energy, your femininity, all these things, then it's almost like a weapon. You have to be careful who you use it with because people are just going to be falling for you left and right, okay? So great question. Let's see. Sonia agrees, men 10 years younger. And hey, their life expectancy is already, you know, 10 years less than you, so might as well get them young. Let's see what we've got here. Let's see. I want to get back to this one by Susan. As a therapist and a woman whose disposition is warm, open, and inviting, I seem to have great difficulty discerning between men who are just enjoying conversation, men who are in need of a therapeutic ear, men who are interested in friendship, or men who are interested in deeper connection. My instincts fail me every time, which is creating anxiety and a desire to shut down with men in general. Okay, so Susan, don't shut down with men in general. That would be a mistake because they like you and they want to be around you. At the same time, if you do not have a strong mental representation of the kind of interaction that you do want with them, then you're just going to be overwhelmed every time one of them kind of waltzes into your life. So have a notion of what you do want. And what I would do is I would get better at explicitly expressing my boundaries. What are your boundaries? What do you want? If this is a first date, hey, this is what I want out of it. If this is a second date, this is what I want out of it. If this is a relationship, this is what I want out of it. You do want intimacy, you don't want intimacy. You know, make these things more explicit while at the same time appreciating the guy. And I think that might be useful towards kind of sifting out what you want. And also the five criteria that I mentioned, if you think of them that way too, you know, a guy who has your back is usually not also the guy who wants to use you or kind of take advantage of the therapeutic relationship, whatever it is, or just, you know, or just have you be some kind of means to his end of feeling better about himself. So use the five criteria. I think those might hold you in good stead. Okay. Let's see. Let me take a couple more questions. It's already 7:20. I mean, I'm happy to answer your questions, but eventually we got to close this business so you guys can go home. When online dating, and I'm an older woman, recently men have said that they only want to focus on me and to take our profiles down off the website. If I'm not ready to do that, what's a good way to respond that won't turn them off so I can get to know them better? Oh, such a good question. Now, again, I am not the online dating expert. I'm the guy who says, don't use online dating because these tricky things come up. But now that it has come up, here's how I would deal with it. You say, look, I really enjoy your company. I think you're great, and I'd like to see you more. At the same time, you know, in the beginning of things, I don't want to restrict your freedom, and I'm hoping that you can also respect my freedom and not restrict mine. I think it's important to be able to compare different people and see what's out there, and that way you can make an informed decision, and I would want the same for you. If you're not comfortable doing that, then I totally understand, and I, you know, wish you the best. But if you are, I'd love to see you again. So the idea is you're coming from a place of appreciation. You're starting with the appreciation, right? And then you're also setting the boundary, again, in a way that sets both of you free. And then you're expressing what your want is and then closing with more appreciation. So that way you're beginning with appreciation, you're ending with appreciation, you're making it very explicit what you want in the middle and also setting him free. He don't like it, he can walk, right? But you're not saying it like that. If you were to say, yo, free country, I'm a free woman, take it or leave it. Content-wise, similar. However, it leaves something to be desired. So if you do it with a little gratitude sandwich, I call it, appreciation sandwich, you're much more likely to get the result that you want. Okay. Being a god, here's another question from Lisa. Being a goddess, does she wait for a good guy to take initiative or does she go after what she wants? God, such a good question. So feminine energy, masculine energy, we've got both. It's like electrons and protons. Yes, electrons and protons, positive charge, negative charge. Which one's better? Which one's worse? Yo, equal. They're both electrical energy and you have exactly the same amount to balance them out. That said, women, better at implementing the feminine energy. Guys, better at implementing the masculine energy. So masculine is going and getting things, and feminine is allowing things, creating the circumstances that allow things to move into your life, okay? So the goddess wants to be major in feminine energy and express that. And so what you do is you want to create the circumstances that make it very easy for him to, say, ask you out, seek out your company, show up here, right? So you do that, right? And if the guy doesn't get it, then you kind of move up the ladder of explicitness and you know, you move up the ladder, move down the spectrum from more feminine to less feminine. And, you know, for example, you can say something like, so when are you going to ask me out? Okay, so you are not asking him out, but you are definitely letting him know that A, you would like to be asked out, and B, his request is likely to be met affirmatively. So the idea is that you want to prime the pump. So you're using a little bit of masculine energy to get things going. But then once again, you step back into your expansive feminine self and wait for him to do something. Because guess what? If he doesn't do some things, maybe he's not the right guy for you. You want a guy who takes initiative, who actually implements his masculine energy and has the mojo to do it. So you want to catalyze it, you want to prompt it, but you don't want to necessarily do it yourself, okay? Good, good question. What else we got here? Okay, all right, so we're an hour and 25 minutes into this, and I want to thank you for your attention. Thank you for all of your questions. I'm going to look over here on the other column, see if you have more questions that I didn't get to. Let's see. LMR, you are cracking me up. So all of you, thank you so much. Once again, if you found this useful and you want to continue, we've got the Project Irresistible for you. You can do it at your own pace. You can do it with the cohort. You can do it however you want. I highly recommend that you do something, because if whatever you've been doing up to this point has not been getting you the results that you want, it's time to do something else. And dating is a skill. It's a skill that unfortunately nobody taught us and our parents didn't discuss. So you kind of have to find the resources on your own. So I'm hoping that these are some useful resources for you, and I hope you found it all useful. So thank you so much. Project Irresistible starts next Tuesday, July 19th. I hope that you can join us there. And if you found this useful, please tell your friends. The replay will be up. They can come and listen to the whole thing for free. And hopefully all this can help a lot more people than just the couple hundred that have gathered here today with us. So thank you again so much and have a great day. Go forth and conquer. Be the light. Bye-bye.